Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Jacksonville Jaguars were on the clock, 17th overall, but they traded down as Tony Khan becomes the first ever NFL executive in a draft room, shaking off the effects of a pile driver he received on national television in a wrestling ring the night before. Such is life when you mix AEW and the NFL. Tony Khan, hang in there, buddy. Hang in there. That's it.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. I am thoroughly enclosed in the internet wrestling bubble. He is Chris Novembrino. He couldn't care less.
It's not unfair.
No, I have the draft on in the background here, the NFL draft, and Tony Khan wearing a neck brace, but it's one of those cheap foam ones type of a thing. He looks like Bill Murray from Wild Things. You remember
that? Who does he have behind him?
No, there's a TV behind him.
Oh, he had a guy in that one video clip.
Oh, no. Oh, you mean in the that's his dad. That's Shad Khan.
Oh, okay. He looks like, what's his name from Community?
Dad showed up on Dynamite. Did you miss that part?
I mean, I watched the beatdown. I had it on as I was cleaning my house. It was poignant. I was captivated as I was changing my laundry.
We'll talk about it later. Chris is recovering from surgery.
Yes. Yes. I went in and had a double, I believe it's pronounced meningitis yesterday, which means that both of my eardrums now have been perforated and have pressure equalization tubes in them. And
it was a problem in both ears. I thought it was only one.
It was only, well, yes, but no, in the sense that one was worse than the other. But in the case of both, my hearing was more good on the left side than the right side, but both were like blocked, or both have blockage and pressure equalization issues. Now I'm improved. And I am recovering. Yesterday, getting out of surgery, they actually put me under for surgery. So I was in twilight mode coming out of the sedatives for a good 45 minutes when my friend picked me up. And I was apparently a bit of a handful. Like, I was in a good mood and everything coming out of surgery, but was not having any sort of long-term thinking at all. So we go to this gas station.
Wait, was it a local, or were you put under?
Oh, no, I was put under with an IV.
Okay.
So I came out, and I was pretty foggy, and we're at the gas station, and I apparently buy an iced tea, which I only put together hours later when I'm looking at my kitchen table and I see an Arizona iced tea there, and I'm like, I must have bought that.
Some people black out. There's a woman in their bed that they don't recognize. There might be a bottle of booze. Chris wakes up. What's this Arizona iced tea doing next to me? And what did I do this afternoon?
Yeah. So I'm like, Oliver, what did I do? And he proceeds to tell me in detail about my antics in the gas station, which involved me getting the iced tea, going up to the gas station counter with my iced tea, and then proceeding to give the gas station clerk, who was an older Hispanic woman in her mid to late 50s, And my extended sedatives induced take on taxes and how they work, which was apparently incoherent garbage. She was just letting me ramble about taxes to her. And then eventually I settle in and buy a pack of American Spirit Blacks and proceed to have some sort of conspiracy that's attached to American Spirit Blacks. I have no idea what it would have been even. And
I'm afraid to do that because I might get canceled. So let's just move on.
So I get escorted out, or not escorted, but like I get escorted out by my friend out to the gas pump, and he's pumping gas, and all of a sudden he sees me, and I'm just standing there trying to light a cigarette like inches away from a gas pump. So I get shimmied into the car here, and I was like a real mess coming out of surgery from the sedatives. It was a hoot.
I just remember when I had my bladder cancer surgery, waking up after the anesthesia and feeling like it was the best night of sleep I'd ever had. Like, I'll never get that back. Like, I'm always tired because I work East Coast hours here on the West Coast. And then, like, for years, I worked overnights. And I always feel like I've never had a good night's rest. And I just want that feeling back, Chris. That feeling that it's like, that's the best sleep I've ever had.
Well, I slept well. Yeah. It was very nice last night going to bed, and it didn't matter which side I slept on, and making sure that I positioned myself so that I didn't like sleep in a way that made like the next morning terrible. So, the only major difference hearing wise, like I can hear you clear as day. The one thing that's different now is my own voice is weird and muffled. From as a result of it. But otherwise, I can hear everything great.
Well, let's get to the news. Filing in court with the United States District Court for Connecticut by Vince McMahon's attorneys include a motion to compel arbitration. Vince McMahon is requesting the case be handled in private arbitration hearings rather than litigating in court publicly, something which his lawyers argue is mandated by the binding arbitration clause in the non-disclosure agreement Janelle Grant signed in 2021. In fact, because the parties wish to, quote, preserve the confidential and private nature, unquote, of any disputes under the agreement, they specifically provided in the agreement that disputes would be resolved through arbitration. Nothing says love like an arbitration clause.
Oh, God, no, I know. But I mean, honestly, there's nothing better than being with the woman you love and your favorite arbiter.
Plaintiff was represented by a lawyer who negotiated the agreement for her before she executed it. When defendant learned that plaintiff, despite her promises, this is the wording in the filing, had violated the agreement by wrongfully disclosing both the existence of the agreement and their relationship, Vince exercised his contractual right to withhold payment otherwise owed under the agreement. Chris, I am still of the opinion that Vince or somebody he knows leaked the name to one Brad Shepard, the less said about Brad Shepard, the better, because I could get in trouble for talking about him. In order to then nullify the NDA so that Vince could stop paying him. And now it's become a thing where it's like, well, this was in the NDA and we don't believe the NDA is valid anymore. Therefore arbitration. If he wins the arbitration case, you are not going to hear a damn thing about any of this crap that was in the filing or what is true and what is not true. It's going to be amazing in some ways, Chris. And I don't mean that in a good way.
No, I certainly do not want him to be able to, you know, get this into arbitration. This should be litigated in an actual court. And I continue to just really hate the idea that you can draft a contract wherein you can do something that is by the letter of the law, both like national, state, local, etc., is illegal, and essentially handcuff them from being able to action upon that in a legal court. There's something deeply, deeply perverse and wrong about that paradigm. It should not be.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because when the name was outed in some ways, I believe the tweet, which has since been deleted, was something to the effect of, I have been told by sources within WWE that the name of the person in question is this. So it wasn't her that leaked it. I don't think Janelle Grant is going to the guy who was doing polls on best butt in the WWE and leaking, hey, did you know I was sleeping with Vince McMahon? This is the shady part to me. I think there's probably some stooge of Vince's that he goes, hey, I need a favor here, but I need plausible deniability. I'm speculating on that. And this whole thing I can't. If he gets to arbitration, that man is the most blessed man ever in terms of having just great lawyers who know law and can finagle this somehow. I hope Janelle Grant's attorney is good. I really do, because it's going to be hard to argue this unless they come up with that kind of logical conclusion that it wasn't her that leaked it. Because that's what they're basically having to fight against, is saying, well, how did this get out? And, you know, it's a he said, she said thing for the most part. Although I hope they have a screenshot of that tweet. That's all I'm saying. If they don't, I'll give them one. anything else on this?
No. Okay. No, I wish nothing but the worst for Vince McMahon.
Same. WWE made some roster cuts late Friday night during SmackDown as it was airing live on the East Coast. Jinder Mahal, Veer, Sangha, Xia Li, Zion Quinn, Von Wagner, and Cameron Grimes all released. Also under the radar from last week when I missed, Sid Scala, the former assistant to Johnny Saint on NXT UK, was still on the roster for some reason, even after getting, what was the name of the,
Speaking Out.
I was about to say Me Too, but no, it was Speaking Out. For the most part, I guess, according to a Fightful report, the cuts were, the people they were looking to cut were people who had been with the company for more than 5 years, who they did not believe would make it to a upper mid card to top tier card level of talent.
How do you look at a person like Jinder Mahal and not think that this man could be a world champion?
Well, all right, let's take him out of the equation. There are three people on here I think you had something with, maybe four if you count Von Wagner. I like Von. I thought Von Wagner over-delivered in those segments.
No. Von Wagner absolutely had found a personality. And yes, it was endearing in a weird way. And him and Stone have a weird and endearing chemistry. And they missed the boat with that a little bit. They figured it out with them.
If you just tell Veer's story, is Veer's the one who had the million-dollar arm? The
million-dollar arm, yeah.
Yeah, just tell that story about that, and you get some things about him. Sangha had a great character in NXT as a babyface before they turned him into random foreign heel of some sort. And Cameron Grimes, I mean, Trevor Lee was the hottest name on the independent circuit when he got picked up by NXT at that time. He was PWG champion when PWG meant something.
He found himself a gimmick while there with To the Moon.
Yeah, with the stock trading thing.
Yep.
And he gets brought up by Vince, and Vince sees nothing in him. I believe somebody in the company told me that Vince thinks he looks like a caveman. Like, all right, give him a caveman gimmick.
That's why they made him shave.
That's why they made him shave, and they shaved his body, and they shaved his hair and his beard. And then they just made him vanilla as hell. Probably hated his southern accent and the fact he was from North Carolina, because Vince hates both those things since he's from North Carolina. Yeah, that's a guy, and it's funny because according to him, I guess, somebody, an upper management apparently said 5 days before he got cut, you're going to have a job here for life. Never believe your company. Never believe your company. I'm sorry. As an employee, I've never been fired. I've never been let go. I've never been cut. per se, in terms of in the corporate world. I have in the entertainment business. So you never believe anybody in that business anyways. But yeah, I mean, WWE was his dream. He's going to be fine because he'll be hot on the indies. AEW will probably take a look at him. If they don't, TNA will probably bring him back. And if he does something with a gimmick or something that gets him hot, WWE may re-sign him because I believe Hunter really, really liked him. Although, if he really, really liked him, why would he cut him? That's the question I have. Of the others, look, the only thing about Xia Li is that she could kick the crap out of you when she wasn't supposed to kick the crap out of you. I kind of wanted to see her and Julia from Stardom just stiff each other. Now, Marigold, sorry. Zion Quinn was inexplicable. He was on NXT for a while, gets called up in the last draft, never gets put on television.
Not once.
And Von Wagner was in that draft too, if I recall. Von Wagner was never put on main roster TV either.
He is someone who has been really killed by Solo Sikoa.
Yes.
Because he was getting pushed. Solo gets, you know, ready and they start pushing him, and Solo's great, but boy, it felt like Zion Quinn and Solo Sikoa were the same character, and there's just no space for Quinn.
Yeah. Interesting enough, do you know who Zion Quinn's wife is?
No.
Harley Cameron.
Who is?
She was the blonde from QTV. She's now with Soraya doing the she's mostly on Rampage now.
Okay.
Doing comedy stuff, yeah.
Okay.
That's interesting. Well, that might be interesting to you. Some quick hits. Robert Stone, as a result of Von Wagner probably being cut, now producing in NXT. Don't know if he's ever going to have an on-screen role again. I thought they might use him or bring him up to clown on Tony Khan. I thought that might be the move, but apparently they're not going to get that petty about it. Matt Hardy reintroduced this week. He's now your TNA champ. Broken Matt Hardy. Steve Macklin re-signed with TNA. He was having a good run there. I'm kind of shocked he didn't test the water somewhere else. And the Grizzled Young Veterans will debut on Collision. They've been doing stuff with TNA and on the indies. They're also opening their own promotion called Burning Heart Pro Wrestling. Their first show will take place at Liverpool. As you know, Zach Gibson, Liverpool's number one. Olympia, Liverpool, England on June 21st. Any of those, anything on that? What's your whistle?
Boy, I mean, Zach Gibson could give AEW some serious charisma injection in a relatively short order. Like, Gibson coming up and fighting with Swerve Strickland would be a good program.
I don't think they're going to be sticking around. I think this might just be a one-off or a tryout. They may sign them after this. They are taking on the Acclaimed. And depending on which members of the Acclaimed are still able to work, because Max Caster said on X today that he was suspended, probably as a result of the rap he did in the pre-show, where he literally goes past the music and he starts freestyling, and it's the Max Caster of old, the homophobic tropes, etc., etc. This feels like an angle to me in some ways, maybe perhaps breaking up the Acclaimed eventually, but I think the Grizzled Young Veterans are good. There's rumors that the Motor City Machine Guns have signed with All Elite. I think the Grizzled Young Veterans would be a nice addition to their tag team roster, but it's a bloated roster. But I agree, Zach Gibson can talk. And that is a big, big deal in a company like AEW, even though I just watch for the matches, guys won't tell you that. I'm here to tell you, they need some personality in this roster, and Zach Gibson certainly is it. I agree with you.
I am looking forward to seeing Max Caster go to inclusivity training on AEW
television. He's going to call Zach Gibson a penis. I know he is. If he's on this TV show, he's going to say he looks like a penis. I can almost guarantee you that.
That's a good burn. I wish I had came up with that.
Matt,
I mean, it's right there. Like, I didn't even see it.
So sorry I thought of it. Broken Matt Hardy is TNA champion, though. Like, TNA had done some things under Scott D'Amore where they were, I mean, they had a little bit of momentum. They didn't have AEW catching momentum, but you have Josh Alexander there. You have a good crew. of wrestlers there. And this old, done with gimmick that has is long past its expiration date. And to me, it's just they signed Matt so that when Jeff's contract runs out, we could do another dance in TNA with Jeff Hardy, who famously got drunk before a pay-per-view match with Sting.
That was just the one time.
This move baffles me to no end, Chris. Any thoughts on this or no?
Hold on. You may say that the broken Matt Hardy gimmick, the character is a bit long in the tooth, and I'm not gonna fight you on that. That was 10 years ago, Jeff. Believe it or not, it's 24 now. The Matt Hardy stuff was back in 2014. But the thing about Matt Hardy as TNA champion, although the gimmick is a bit long in the tooth, the work's going to be there.
Didn't see that one coming. That was very good, Chris. Chris, if you would, in front of you, you have the numbers for NXT. Can you read them, please?
Absolutely. Viewership throughout the first 2 hours of NXT began with the show at 572,000 viewers at the top of the first hour, before eventually climbing to 721,000 viewers at the top of the second hour. That peak was eventually surpassed in the 8-minute overrun period at the end of the show, as the broadcast ended with 744,000 viewers tuning in to see Trick Williams win his first NXT championship.
Okay. Wednesday night's Dynasty Fallout edition of AEW Dynamite averaged 683,000 viewers on TBS. That's down 10.4% from last week and marks the lowest audience total the show has done in its regular time slot since January 6, 2021, an episode that took place on the same day as the United States Capitol riot. Now you're saying, but Jeff, they were going up against the NBA and NHL playoffs. Well, as compared to the same week in 2023 when Dynamite also went against the NBA, the show was down 20.9% in overall viewers and down 17.9% in 18 to 49. Chris, this baffles me. It really does. Because that Dynasty pay-per-view, I'm going to be very interested to see the numbers in that. Because that was...
Well, yeah, how much did that Dynasty pay-per-view cost again?
$50.
Okay.
It was a great pay-per-view, though.
$50 is a lot of money in America.
It was a great pay-per-view, though.
You sound like General Dreidel in Catch-22 telling me that the bombing patterns are excellent. We didn't hit any of the targets, but the patterns look exquisite.
Yeah, I know, and I think my point is this. I love my people who love their AEW. And they just want their great matches. They want their bangers. But you're going, I mean, look, I get that the WWE is hotter than it's been since the Attitude Era. I get that. I still don't think people watch American television wrestling on the weeks to see great matches. I think great matches are good. I think they're good spread out. I don't think they necessarily want a show of 2 hours of great matches. I have said, and there's probably a column in me about this, Chris, so I'm gonna focus test it on you. Because to me, the opposite of WWE, if you really want a true alternative to WWE, is Heat. And I don't mean WWE Heat. I mean Heat. I mean hate and anger, and people that don't like each other, and people that are talking smack to each other. And the problem right now is WWE now has that. It had that in The Rock. It had that in Cody. It has that in Drew McIntyre and CM Punk and Sheamus, and even Chad Gable in some ways. It has Heat now. And so it's going to be hard to have an alternative to WWE. And everybody will tell you, oh, well, it's about the good wrestling. WWE has quite good wrestling. It's not five stars, six star, you know, classics. Don't get me wrong. But you save those for your pay-per-views, and you do the build on the weekly television. And the problem is we're doing 4.5-star matches on TV to build to hopefully having 5-star matches, which isn't that much of a difference. I think people have been, if there is such a thing as casual fans, and I do believe there are such thing as casual fans. Number one, if there's only a certain amount of allotted time that you can watch wrestling, and if you have the choice between 3 hours on Monday, 2 hours on Wednesday, and then just the glut on Fridays and Saturdays, you're going to pick the hotter hand. You're going to pick the more popular product, I think, if you know, or the thing that will, you know, satisfy your wants in terms of heat and seeing people talk smack and, oh, this is entertaining me right now versus just two guys having an athletic exhibition. That's very good. I think it's heat. I think that's the thing that people want. It's why TNA has never caught on. That's why Ring of Honor has never caught on. Everybody's thinking they want WWE Lite or wrestling as a vanilla competition where people shake hands and other things like that. No, the reason Samoa Joe was great and CM Punk were great in ROH and Jay Briscoe were great in ROH is because you believe their promos that they hated people. It's one of those things that just baffles me about the I just want good wrestling crowd in some ways, Chris. How did I do? Good, bad, ugly?
I generally agree with that. Okay. I just don't.
I'll write it out. I'll eventually get there, I think. It's one of those things where it's just like
WWE is harder to make a counter program to, and I think even the project now of trying to come up with a counter program or a reverse or opposite of WWE is the wrong project. What a show like AEW needs to be doing if they're looking at what's up, what's wrong, is looking at this week-to-week television and asking themselves, is this a good 2-hour program? Like, you can have a bunch of parts, but if the parts don't actually fit together well and result in a pleasant arrangement, then it's not that engaging of a formula. I think one of the problems for AEW right now is that these well-worked matches are also like 20-something minutes.
Yes.
In some cases, it makes my job a lot easier as a reviewer, because if it's a match where the two component parts or the four component parts are nothing new under the sun, I can move along and save 20 minutes of my watch time. But I don't think that makes for a good television show. Raw used to have that problem. AEW now has that problem much more often.
Yeah, Raw still suffers for me for like the 20-minute talking segment at the beginning. I'm not always a big fan of that, but it at least sets the table. We'll get to that in a moment.
And just the talking has gotten better on WWE
that's
television.
That's true.
Everybody just sounds like a human much more often now.
We'll also get to that on AEW television. Mercedes. That's the end of the news. We'll get now to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, there is a lot of wrestling on television. We get to most of it. Chris has not had time to watch AEW Dynasty just yet. I did. I watched it live. I also did a post show over on the Fight Game Media Network.
You like, hit him with some tags here. This will give me a chance to reload my bong.
Yeah, if you want to hear a thorough deconstruction of it, myself and Kevin Ely and Mel—I want to say Mel Gray, but that's not her last name. I don't think. I'm trying to remember Mel's last name right now.
You guys are pretty close, huh?
I like Mel. She's nice.
Oh yeah, no, clearly.
It's just one of those things where I can't remember her last name right now. Hold on. I'll figure it out in a second here. Yeah. Da, 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 da.
So you guys can actually, if you're watching.
No, it's Mel Gray. I was right. Okay. I thought Mel Gray was a kick returner. was in Williamsburg at one time. Anyways, as I told Chris, if I'm judging pay-per-views, and I haven't liked a lot of AEW pay-per-views in terms of, like, I've felt at times, like, the early pay-per-views to me overstayed their welcome. Like, it was a jam band concert. And the string cheese incident decided to go into their third solo or whatever. You know, all out, or not all out, Full Gear 2 years ago, I think, may have been their best pay-per-view. I'm trying to remember offhand. Maybe I'm thinking All Out from 2 years ago. I think this one, from top to bottom, didn't have a single clunker in it. There are other pay-per-views like Revolution. The Sting match was such a higher high, but there were lower lows on that show, so they evened out. This one, every match kind of did what it was supposed to do for the most part, and you didn't really have a clunker in it. Some people will say Jericho and Hook might have been a bit of a clunker, but it did what it was supposed to do. Chris Jericho, Hook being defiant and throwing up the double deuce while Chris Jericho hits him with a bat for the FTW championship.
Taz this week on commentary saying that he was very annoyed with Chris Jericho really brought it home for me.
There are some who are prisoner of the moment, in my opinion, saying Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson is the best wrestling match ever. I won't disagree with those who want to have that take, because for that style, it was probably the best type of that indie match where you're doing a lot of moves and a lot of high-risk moves. Very choreographed, very, you know, that kind of work. It was very good. I still have a problem with people giving more than 5 stars for a match. Because I think it's one of those things, especially if you give something like this a 6.5-star type thing. Back in the day when Flair and Steamboat were getting 5 stars or 6 stars even, you know, even like Terry Funk on commentary, I was reminded on this week by Garrett Gonzalez on his show. It's like Terry Funk was on commentary for one of those matches and going, these guys are going at a breakneck pace where most other guys couldn't do. That's what Danielson and Ospreay really was. And in 20 or 30 years, there are going to be guys who are better than Ospreay and Danielson. And so you can't give them 8 stars. That's why I like 5 stars. It was a perfect match. And then you can argue over time and other things like that. But yes, it was a fantastic match. I personally, I kind of check out of these types of matches because I'm waiting for the first pinfall kick out at 2, you know, the big one, and then it gets going. But I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it. Roddy Strong and Kyle O'Reilly was the most Roddy Strong and Kyle O'Reilly match you'll ever see. If you've watched it in NXT, if you watched it in Ring of Honor, if you watched it elsewhere, you did. It drove me nuts, though, that Roderick Strong worked on Kyle O'Reilly's back for 11 minutes, and Kyle O'Reilly didn't sell his back once. I was blown away by that. Okada and Pac started the main show. I won't go over the pre-show because there's not much in there, to be honest with you, for me. But Okada and Pac was a pretty damn great match to start things off with, to the point where I didn't even notice that the size differential, because Okada's 6'5", Pac's like 5'7" at most. Okada is doing the most old school heel stuff you'll ever see. You know, he's denying you the signature moves. You know, he's kind of stalling, kind of going in slow motion a little bit, but he's still Okada. And I just, he did this thing, Chris, where, you know, instead of doing the Rainmaker pose, he went down and he gave them the middle finger, and then he started walking around the ring. Like, I don't know if you ever saw the Triumph the Insul Comic Dog sketch where he goes down to the Star Wars premiere and then the guy dressed as Spock comes in throwing up the middle finger. He was doing exactly that to the rest of the crowd at Dynasty. Look, House of Black versus Copeland, Kingston, and Briscoe. This should have been the bunkhouse match. Screw that one on Collision, which was very good, but I didn't see the reason for it between the BCC and Fletcher and Hobbs. I mean, but it was a good match. I love Kingston getting so mad that he starts tripping over himself, and Mark Briscoe almost corpses to death. But you know, it was a good match. Willow versus Julia Hart, short match, did what it needed to do. I was shocked at how short it went as well. It went only 6 minutes. First powerbomb by Willow, pinfall, 1, 2, 3. My favorite match up until that point, because I've talked about all the others, I really loved at least the first 3 quarters of Toni Storm versus Thunder Rosa. It was worked like a 1980s NWA match to me, because every punch felt like they were really punching each other. They were stiff with each other. They were trying to win a fight, and I absolutely adored that. I did not care necessarily for the Deonna Purrazzo coming in to attack Luther type of stuff, because it just the Thunder Rosa Deonna Purrazzo feud over I don't want your help even though I'm getting screwed in this match type thing. It's one of the worst feuds you can have in a wrestling company, and only hurts Thunder Rosa. But Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm both had massive promos going into this match. They both aired on Collisions, which I know Chris doesn't have necessarily have the time to watch, and it's a shame because it's the B show. They should be putting this on the A show. But they played a lot of at least the Toni Storm promo during the pre-show and in the pre-match for this. Osprey Danielson, again, sublime. And if you are a fan of modern indie style, they did a move where Danielson hits the knee as Osprey is trying to do the Os Cutter, and Boyd, he tagged him, but boy, it was spectacular stuff. Go out of your ways to watch if you didn't. It's 32 minutes and 40 seconds of two of the best doing it. I would have liked a little bit of more intensity in terms of the emotion getting to a second thing or the brutality getting up there. It really didn't. It was a dream match. Both guys were being very friendly with one another. Okay, that's what you get. The Bucks and Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler had to follow that. And the crowd was kind of quiet for them until it started going. And then once it started going, they were into this. Cash Wheeler was doing his flippy guy routine again in the middle of this hardcore match. And they beat the snot out of one another with these ladders. All props to the Jackson brothers. They were taking bumps on these ladders. For guys their age, they're going to be crippled probably in their 40s. It was something. Yeah, and then, of course, the Jungle Boy comes back, makes his return as a masked Sting-type figure who pushes down the ladder. They unmask him. They had the perfect camera angle for it. It was pretty great. And then Swerve Strickland, as expected, beating Samoa Joe by pinfall. My only qualm with this one, Swerve Strickland needs a new finisher. And because that stomp off the top rope, whatever he calls it, the guy just has to stay there too long and kind of act woozy. And he really milked it for this pay-per-view one. But they wanted to do this. They made a huge deal out of him being the first black champion in AEW. And now, Chris, we get to the rest of the story. And I think we should start with Dynamite, because it baffled me. Absolutely baffled.
To hear you tell me about the pay-per-view,
uh-huh,
having watched Dynamite, the disconnect is pretty jarring. Dynamite opens up not having Swerve Strickland do a promo.
Yes, you're stealing my thunder here a little bit, but I could not. You crown a new champion, and you don't open with that new champion, especially a babyface champion, especially one you are pushing as a historical champion. Coming out to at least thank the fans for their support, blah, blah, blah. He can get interrupted by Kyle Fletcher if you want to do that match later. But no, we open with Trent Beretta headlining the C show this week. This mid-card angle with the best friends, throwing Orange Cassidy out so we can play Jane. And giving Chuck his choice and whatever. This angle could have waited to the second hour.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from Arena Club. .com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's gonna be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably gonna get in those. Maybe you find that fun, And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
What the, and
this angle,
then
no, don't let this angle go so quickly. Oh, Taylor's performance throughout this was absolute garbage. All right, to end this, The line that really got me was, I always knew you were a piece of shit, which for guys who are best friends, that ends up being a weird sort of self-own.
But Chris, this was a callback to BT, to being the elite, where he said his dream was to be able to say the S word on TV. Yay, we paid off the long-term storytelling of the social media show. And then we follow that up with IWGP champion John Moxley cutting a promo. So we are now telling you that the mid-card feud with the best friends and the IWGP champion, a belt that isn't even part of this company per se. Like, Willow got to have a moment in her thing. Moxley gets to have a moment.
Swerve gets to have an agonizingly long match against Kyle Fletcher, who you know he's going to beat.
Yes. They have cynically now, to me, because they didn't announce this till afterwards, say that, Swerve Strickland will be cutting his first promo as champion on Collision because it comes after the NBA playoffs and they're hoping for that holdover audience who've watched a 3-hour basketball game and will of course want to be watching 3 hours of professional wrestling after that because both Collision and
absolutely care about Swerve Strickland.
Yes. It's a cynical move for the basketball audience. Let's put it that way. I think in some ways, I don't know if it'll work. If it works, I will do a complete mea culpa. Complete. But to me, if you switch your title on a pay-per-view, on your A show, you should be opening with your champion. Period. That's it. And it's just a useless, it's a title eliminator match against Kyle Fletcher. He's ROH TV champion. Yes, he's a TV champion for a company that doesn't have TV.
You're forgetting something else, though.
And he's 6'5".
He looks like Will Ospreay.
Yes.
It's foreshadowing.
No, it's not foreshadowing, Chris. It can't be foreshadowing.
Oh, that's not foreshadowing.
Well, not yet.
That it's called long-term storytelling. Oh. They're doing it. It's a stunt double.
Well, then why do you put him in the match? Why would you put Will in the match for the international title, which they did later that night? As a surprise, because they realize you can't take the title off of Swerve at all in Wembley, which is where he should be winning the title, your biggest star, your biggest free agent signing.
It's called, again, to invoke movies, a twist, or another people call it a swerve. Get it? See? See? Like, it's a fake out. They're faking you out.
No, I get it. We're going to push the split of at least Will Ospreay from the Callis family. But why are we using Swerve Strickland to do that right now? I guess. Well, because you're going to have Will and Swerve eventually. Yeah, but you can't have that for All In, I don't think. I don't think you can do that for All In. I hope they don't do that for All In. It'd be a mistake because Swerve will get booed out of the building in England against Will Ospreay. But my thinking is they may put Callis with the Elite. I think the entire... With all three guys, or with everybody except Ospreay losing in the Callis family, I think Takeshita is going to lose to Moxley because they set that up for an IWGP title match. I think Callis decides the hell with this. I'm going with winners, and he jumps to the Elite. I don't know, but it just all of this first half of the first hour was just baffling to me, Chris, and I have talked enough. It is your turn to respond.
I'm not going to try to rebut you on the quality or lack thereof of the first hour here. I found it to be pretty baffling. Audio issues marred the show numerous times. Serena Deeb cutting a promo into the camera for, I don't know, about 90 seconds, of which the only thing you can make out was going to be AEW Women's Champion at the end of it because it was being overwhelmed by her own theme song, was a notable highlight in production flaws. It feels sort of like AEW's a bit gotten to about WWE's new camera angles and like some of the new camera stuff they're doing, and they're trying to do some of that stuff themselves, like how they did that opening shot with the Bucks, and even the Serena Deeb thing here where she's not using a microphone, she's just doing it into the camera, but they don't have
they're using the camera microphone instead of a boom mic. And so it's not getting picked. Basically what she said is the next time I won't touch her championship like you usually see. The next time I touch this championship, it'll be after I win it. And so it's basically, and I'm here for that. I thought Serena Deeb should have come out in her gear instead of dressed up, because her whole thing is she's a professor in a dojo and she's the serious wrestler type thing. So, but yeah, no, the audio issues, I was screwing around with my receiver because I wasn't getting any good sound off of this entire show for some reason, and it was driving me absolutely insane. But you were correct about that.
Beyond that, okay, like Mina Shirakawa and Anna Jay, I find myself now confused. Anna Jay's been a babyface at various points in the last couple of months, right?
Yes, like
yeah. So like she was like a heel in this match, and then like a heel in the aftermath as well. It's the Mariah May, Mina Shirakawa, Toni Storm stuff is not interesting to follow, and also kind of hard to follow.
It's not titillating to you at all?
No.
It's a love triangle story, Chris, while also doing whatever happened to Baby Jane between Mariah and Toni. But see, now her tag team partner slash friend from Stardom has come in, and they're drinking champagne and they're making out and whatnot. But meanwhile, Toni is saying, "Come to my bosom, child," and doing all that stuff. So,
dude, I get it. They're lesbians.
Yes.
A lot of people are gonna like that.
All right, let's get to the end of this show.
I mean, you want to talk about the Willow?
Oh, we can do that too. I mean, we can go through the entire show bit by bit if you'd like.
Monet, it feels like now we have given up on her as a babyface. Now she's going to be a heel. We've already gotten to the first turn.
I don't know, because it feels that way, but it also feels like, look, I'm only upstaging you because I thought you were the one who beat me up. Because it feels like Stat is definitely the heel in all this. It feels like Statlander is going to be the ultimate. I mean, but whether or not she's aligned with Mercedes, I don't know. There are a couple things about this I liked, actually. I thought the staging of the slap was very, very clever, where Stat grabs Mercedes, but she thinks it's Willow, so she just turns around and hauls off without looking at who was grabbing her. I thought Willow was having a good promo night in terms of if you were just listening to it. Here's where my words come back to haunt me, Chris, because I have said for years now that people should do promos into the camera. You know the one time you shouldn't do a promo into the camera? When someone is right there talking to you. And that's what Willow was. She was for some reason turning to look in the camera like, no, Willow, no, talk over there. That's the other character in your scene. Go talk to her. But I thought the promo was good. I thought Willow might have had one of her best nights on the microphone, if you just judge by the microphone.
I agree with that. I just, the Monet stuff, I don't know. I feel like they've already started to lose a little bit of the new car smell on Mercedes Monet.
Yes, no, I would agree. And I'm almost confused as who wins this match at Double or Nothing. Because logic would tell you, in terms of story, that it's a Willow redemption tour, that I'm going to beat you when you're at full strength. The problem is Mercedes Moné is one of your big time, big money free agents, and she should win. I think they're going to mess this up, Chris. I think they're going to have Statlander somehow screw Willow so that Mercedes wins, and so nobody's happy about it.
Right. That's kind of where we're going to build to a Statlander Willow feud.
Yeah.
But and not then, for and, the title.
And then we'll separate Mercedes and she'll go on her way and she'll have, you know, her dream matches against whoever. Probably a couple Joshi girls, probably Riho. or, you know.
Mina, I guess.
Mina, maybe. Somebody for Forbidden Door if she wants to do CMLL. I know Mercedes wants to wrestle Tessa Blanchard, but I don't know if they'll have Tessa Blanchard be Forbidden Door match for CMLL. That just seems weird. But, yeah. Big Bill being under the learning tree is a downgrade from Ricky Starks, correct?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
Could not believe that.
Jeez. I was waiting for that to be a swerve where Big Bill clocks Jericho and turns face. And
I was, too.
It wasn't. And
and it's terrible now.
No, it was. It made the whole scene really bad. I thought he was just laying it on thick. And then,
yeah.
Then we got to the end, and he wasn't laying it on thick at all.
Okay, you had the same reaction I did. I go, this is so disingenuous. How could he be meaning any? And then it's like, no, he's really, okay, huh? What?
Yeah.
Should we get to the end? Or do you have something else? Okay.
Yeah, let's go to the end here.
Oh, my. Oh, well, because Hobbs got hurt during his match. So it's like, yeah, you can't really. I don't have an update on his knee, but it looks like he injured his knee in that main event match against Mox. And then we get at the end of the night. Jungle Boy and Tony Khan in the ring together. And then the EVPs and Kazuchika Okada do a Meltzer driver, now probably known as a Tony driver, on one. First, Perry hugs him, gives him that smile, and then punches him with the microphone in the stomach. And Tony acts like he's been punched in the face and is knocked out. Hilarious. The EVPs and Okada come in. They tease the trigger.
EVP trigger.
And then they do this. And yes, they give him a Meltzer driver.
I like to think of it as a power con.
One of them rips his pants, which is very funny. And all the baby faces empty the locker room because you hurt our boss. Including Shad Khan coming in to check on, look what they did to my boy, type of a thing. This is all set up by a meeting in the locker room or in Tony Khan's office when we know Tony Khan's in Gorilla because we had the Young Bucks in Gorilla last week, which is amazing in its own right in terms of losing continuity from week to week. But nevertheless, I think we're getting Tony Khan as an on-screen character in some way.
We crossed a lot. This is the big thing. The big thing about this show is this is the first week we've turned Tony Khan into an on-screen character.
Is this? God help us. Is this Kevin Nash powerbombing Eric Bischoff? I hope not. To lead to then Bischoff joining the NWO. My thought is because Kenny Omega's on in Winnipeg. If he's still technically an EVP, he gets made acting president because he's nowhere near healthy enough to compete until he gets his surgery. Mm. I could see that happening. I just don't want a lot of Tony Khan on here, and I don't really want...
Well, I certainly don't want, like, Team Tony. I don't want to be rooting for Tony Khan.
That's going to be anarchy. I think that's going to be anarchy in the arena. I think that is. I think they're going to do Anarchy in the Arena, Double or Nothing. It's going to be the Elite versus probably the BCC and somebody else defending the honor of AEW.
And Khan hates getting booed. I don't think he can handle going out there and being this Mondo heel. He's going to have to be the babyface in the story.
But I don't think he's going to be a part of the story. I think he's still going to be a character, but this is going to be like, I think
he's going to come in and he's going to recruit them, Jeff.
Okay.
His inimitable warm tone about which talks about the passion that he has for the company.
I think they're going for Ric Flair defending the honor of David Crockett after Nikita Koloff sickled him, but I don't think they're going to get anywhere near that because Tony Khan is not a sympathetic character to me. look, here's what bugged me about it, to be honest with you.
Tony Khan eyes.
we just played the CM Punk footage, correct? And we played the part where CM Punk, quote unquote, I mean, there was another part apparently somewhere else, but CM Punk went back there and screamed at Tony Khan, and Tony Khan came out, I feared for my life that night, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're doing a kayfabe angle where he gets killed by his executive vice presidents.
And he's stronger than yesterday, like that Britney Spears song.
I just...
There was a point where this man was once scared for his life, and I mean, I obviously, like, to have what happened to happen to him on Wednesday in front of millions on live TV, that was really dangerous. And the man did, he walked, maybe he did one of those coal walking seminars.
Well, it wasn't millions. We saw the numbers.
Okay. But, nearly approaching 800,000, pal.
And it's like, you know,
almost 700,000.
I just think the Bucks are listening to Coronet. And they decide, oh, we can't do this. This is death. This is stupid. Let's go even harder into it.
Didn't we refer to Jericho as a vortex last week on the show?
Yes, we did.
I heard him refer to himself as a vortex this week on AEW.
Did you?
Yes. He referred to it as a vortex.
Huh.
Just saying. It was very weird. Because I was like... I called it the vortex of suck last week, right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, yeah. And Jericho then referred to himself as the vortex, like to step into the Jericho vortex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't like disingenuous babyface as a character for Chris, especially. It's just he's playing punk, I get it, but at the same time doing his own twist on it. But back to Tony Khan. The less Tony Khan is on TV, the better. I know he wants to take credit that this is all his, but it's just... I don't know, Chris. I get some people like this, and some people are looking forward to it. And I actually do like Jack Perry being with the Elite. I think, you know, the guy coming in suits and stuff like that.
He's way better at being Adam Cole than Adam Cole is. And
yes.
It's great, because if you... actually speed up the playback on the Jack Perry promo, it sounds like an Adam Cole promo.
You're kind of right on that.
No, I was watching the show on like a faster speed, and he's basically doing an Adam Cole promo.
Huh. I mean, I think it's going to work out for Jack Perry in some ways. I mean, we're going to really just, I mean, because the Bucks are basically going to be in control of his creative for the most part and really trying to hype it up. But I don't know, man. If this becomes about corporate fealty and your loyalty because they are so gotten to by WWE that they just want to prove their love to the fans of AEW, I don't know. I'm gonna be snarking on it pretty hard, and the people who like AEW are gonna love it. I'm gonna be interested to see the ratings. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, everyone during the WCW versus NWO feud was rooting for WCW, so this ultimately proved to be really good for the WCW brand writ large.
It's the Elite versus Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal this week. And they'll be booking those types of matches. You know what? They could literally next week come on screen and say, it is now All Elite Wrestling. It's going to be nothing but the Elite. Because the president of the company is not here. And that's when Kenny's going to come out and go, no, no, no. I'm also an executive vice president too, so I have been made acting president. Oh my god, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. I have nothing else for AEW. I'd like to move on.
No, let's move on.
I don't have a lot for WWE. Draft coming up, silly season. So while we wait, because they're doing an interesting thing with the draft. No champions are going to switch shows for a first. On this draft, if you can draft stables as your draft pick, so you can pick the bloodline all as one pick, which seems kind of ridiculous to me. Name someone from NXT that's going to make it to the main roster who is not that obvious.
Um, I don't think they're going to call. They're not calling up Regal's kid yet or anything.
I'm thinking it's going to be on the women's side. I think they're calling up Fallon Henley.
Fallon Henley. Interesting pick. I could see JC Jane getting called.
I could also see Kiana James, possibly.
Yeah.
Because she has the character. I'd be like, Fallon Henley is ready for the main roster.
Yes, that's true, too.
Now, coincidentally, pick somebody from the main roster who you think's going to NXT.
Who's going to NXT? Who needs a little bit of rehabby love? Akira Tozawa.
Okay, that's not a bad one because I think they're eventually going to split Tozawa and Otis from Alpha Academy, and they're going to bring in the Creeds with Chad Gable as a heel stable. I think that's the goal eventually.
Yeah, the Creeds and like Ivy Nile, like he's going to replace those three with, you know, three people who aren't losers or make them go up head to head and the winners get to be in Alpha Academy. It's going to
be
the Creeds.
Yeah, as the heel stable type of thing. I think Tozawa's a pretty good pick. I was thinking Nakamura to help Julia acclimate better to the States, but Tozawa wouldn't be the worst one either in that realm. I think Nikki Cross is ending up back in NXT. She's not even on this roster. Her and Valhalla are not on the roster, so I thought they might have been cut, but I haven't heard anything about that.
Mm.
But I think Nikki Cross may end up back in NXT as the veteran woman in there for a while.
Sure. She would be a fun feud for Roxanne Perez.
She was just two very tiny women going at each other. Yeah, I would agree with that. I didn't watch. I kind of watched here and there. I kind of nitpicked, not nitpicked, by you know, I kind of nibbled at a lot of stuff. I really liked the Gable promo this week. I loved the Sheamus and Drew stuff because it feels like that natural progression of here's the friend who's going to do the intervention for the guy who's being a jerk, and it's not going to work, and you know it's not going to work, and then the jerk starts saying things that he probably has always been kind of holding back that he could never say when they were really friends type of a thing. I enjoyed that. I did not enjoy the breakup of Imperium because I like Imperium as a unit, and I don't think Giovanni Vinci without the crew, while he is a fantastic wrestler, and to me he has outkicked his coverage on this roster.
I mean, maybe he might go to NXT. Yeah.
And try and do the model gimmick again that they had him doing before they put him in Imperium.
Maybe that, or maybe just have him be like essentially a mini version of Cesaro for Trick Williams to go up against.
That wouldn't be the worst thing either. Yeah.
Yeah, he makes Trick look great.
Anything for you for WWE? Go ahead.
Sure. I thought that the women's three-way match, while a foregone conclusion match, was good. I was actually surprised by the amount of like crowd engagement for Tatum Paxley in the finish. Yes. People really like Paxley. People were into this Paxley character.
I was surprised Roxanne kept the belt because I thought for sure she was earmarked to go up.
Yeah, also surprising too.
I wonder what the hesitation is there because she's a great wrestler. It might be the size.
Maybe it's a health thing, and they just want to see if she's got the health.
Or you know, the very infamous creative has nothing for her because they look at her and they go, "Well, she's tiny and she's a good wrestler, but we don't want her to beat anybody right now, and we don't want her to get beat, so we'll keep her in NXT as the champion," type of a thing.
Then you had the No Quarter Catch crew lose to the D'Angelo family in a story. I still don't understand what the hell they're trying to tell here. Like, I'm still very confused by who are the good guys and who are the bad guys in this. We're just trying to get to a Heritage Championship match.
I think the story here is that the No Quarter Catch crew wanted Drew Gulak to be killed. But they didn't want to pay for it because the family should have done it because Drew Gulak is such a horrible human being.
Right.
That they should have, and such a blemish on wrestling, which seems a little strong.
That, he needs to work on handshakes.
That he needed to be killed for free for the benefit of the business, and you charging us for this is wrong. I think that's the feud, which is preposterous.
Right. No one's good here because it's like, oh, those guys want their money. Normally, if that was the deal and it was a normal business, like let's say Tony D'Angelo taught guitar lessons, it would make sense that Tony would want the guitar lessons to be paid for. But his business is killing people. And so it's less noble for that reason.
Well, see, in your business, if this were a guitar, the guy would be saying, well, you should teach me for free because I have so much potential as a musician.
Right. But again, it's still my job is an honorable job, or at least not a dishonorable job in any meaningful way. Whereas what the D'Angelo family does is extortion, right? Like they go around to collect money.
Hold on. You're telling me they're not a community organization?
Oh, I mean,
they're not doing stuff for kids out there. You know, the mafia, you know, cotton candy and carnival game.
Oh, look, the little junior mafia program is adorable. I love those kids.
Little third graders in zoot suits and Tommy guns.
Oh, God, I wish nothing for the best for those kids. I hope their dreams take wing, and I hope those little birds fly far with those dreams.
It's so weird that wrestling is based on carny mentality, and we can't get criminals right inside this carny world.
No, so I think your understanding of the story is correct, and that's my understanding of the story too. And what this is going to build to is because they didn't pay for this, they're like the D'Angelo family is going to want the cup as payment.
Yes,
and that's going to be the match.
Will they pawn the cup? Noam Dar would be very upset if they pawned the cup.
I just still don't understand how the D'Angelo family, in any way, shape, or form, are like faces in this. Because, like, even Tony wanting the cup, like, he's not even wanting it to because he cares about, like, heritage wrestling or anything like that. He's just going to want the cup because he wants payment. This is the exact wrong belt for this guy to be wanting to win. It's the exact opposite of a normal belt in that sense. It's all about heritage and tradition and caring about, like, the sanctity of the sport.
I'm more shocked that there's not another mafia family that has taken out this family for putting all their business on television.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
When you think about it, every single move these dopes make is being filmed on camera. Donnie Brasco situation.
Right. Like you know, Tony really misunderstands the way crime families work, right? Like, he's like the boss of this local territory, but he's not like the boss.
He's a weak boss. He shows weakness. Oh, I don't want to cheat with the brass knuckles. I want to be the honorable thief. Like, oh, he'd be whacked in a minute.
They have no idea what the hell they're doing with this Tony D'Angelo character. And it's so obvious that this mafia gimmick has not been some sort of creative font. It's just been a lazy way of making a stable.
It's the Brian Keith is a bounty hunter of NXT gimmicks. He never really collects any bounties in AEW. He's a guy that's a bounty hunter. And that's all we know about him. same with the D'Angelo family. They're a bunch of mafiosos, but instead of being an actual mob family, they decided to turn to wrestling instead of crime.
And then they don't really ever behave crimey. Like, Stax is supposed to be the dirty hand of D'Angelo. Like, he should obviously be a heel. He should be like the Arn Anderson enforcer type, the unlikable one. And he's instead always like sympathetic and always like taking a bullet and always like,
this is the worst mafia family ever.
They really suck as a mafia family in terms of writing.
I mean, Tartaglia might've been a pimp, but he was at least effective as a member of the five families.
So what else happened in here? Lola Vice has Shayna Baszler. Thank Jiminy, at least they've got something to sort of serious her up a little bit.
Shayna may end up in NXT. And I think Shayna and Lola Vice might slap.
Yeah.
Because they both have MMA backgrounds. So it's like, put them in NXT Underground and let them go.
Let them be a tag team and then break up, and then they have like a singles feud, and it's going to be awesome.
And they're good. They're eventually going to do NXT Underground, because if you recall, the WWE lent Shayna Baszler to do Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, which is basically the same thing as the Raw Underground, NXT Underground stuff. It's a worked MMA fight for the most part. So, and they want to get more of that on TV because they really liked it. And Charlie Dempsey also did Bloodsport because he was talking about it on NXT. Okay, cool.
So, and then other than that, Lexus King had a perplexing match against Baron Corbin that was not so much good as it was long.
I was just like, all right, cool. This is going on and on. We're getting rid of Baron Corbin to go back up to the main roster, I would assume. That's great.
I don't think we are. I think that's a fake out, because I think the basket was like a fake, you know, like Lexus King thinking this is over too soon.
Well, I mean, but I think the whole point of that was that Lexus King can't win a match clean. He has to cheat. So it's like, well, that's it for that. Now I've got rid of him type of a thing. I don't understand the Lexus King build at all. It was starting off fairly strong, and now it's just kind of like he's a guy, but they're never going to give him a strong win.
Right, and especially to go up against Trick Williams, he really needs to be winning matches that you wish he wasn't winning, and like he's doing it clean, which makes you feel even grosser about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like we've underestimated this guy. He's sure he's a flake and he's a jerk and he's a liar and all that. But when he gets in the ring, he can actually wrestle.
Right. And that's what makes you start having doubts. Like maybe this creep actually could be Trick.
Maybe if you combine the wrestling skill and his cunningness, he could find a way to beat Trick Williams. He might be our champion. We need to get a little bit nervous about this type of thing on commentary.
Especially with a really good win in that vein against Dragunov.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the headline of this show, Ilya loses the belt here to Trick Williams, thus ending one of the best and most consistent title reigns that this company has ever had for any champion, from match to match to match to match. Dragunov always was at just this I'm not saying it's the best title reign ever. I'm saying that it might be the most consistent one in terms of quality. There's just no duds in the Dragunov catalog of title defenses here, really.
I think you have to give bonus points to Dragunov's title run because he was mostly working with actual recruits who came through the PC, as opposed to say, like, to me, one of the better reigns I'm thinking of, you know, Samoa Joe was really good. Johnny Gargano's title reign was really good. But look at the quality of opponents he was facing. You know, when you're facing, you know, Andrade, or you're facing, you know, Nakamura and guys of that stature versus, and no offense to them, but yeah.
Ilya's carrying all of these matches.
Yes.
These are great matches that he is the architect of.
Yes.
And they're always at this consistent quality, and he just really commits his body to the performance every single time. You know, this is not this title loss was not his best match even in this title reign. But I just thought, again, when he's doing those H bombs from the top, they look sharp, they look stiff, they look convincing, you believe what he does. And yeah, I just tip my cap to him. It was a real pleasure watching this title run.
I'll be interested to see how they present him on the main roster.
Me too.
Because you could go very wrong very quick, as we saw in NXT UK.
Yes.
But then you could do the NXT thing. You could conceivably make him the third member of Imperium, and eventually he turns on them. I mean, that's a story you could do, as opposed to just going directly to Walter. Because everybody's going, oh, man, you know, he'll go up there and the first guy he should face is Walter or Gunther. I'm like, no, sir. You build that.
You build that.
Yeah.
And if anything, what I would do is I'd be building to Ilya versus Sammy. And
oh, that's a hell of a match.
Yes, and I would have Ilya's path involve beating Gunther, so that we see that, like, he has also beaten Gunther. So it's the two men who have beaten Gunther squaring off at let's say, I don't know.
But with the added thing of that Ilya's not afraid of Gunther like Sammy was.
He was. Right, right.
And then you play into that.
Yes. And, like, actually, you could have Gunther take, like, a surprise, like, sort of blowout loss there.
Yeah.
Just that Ilya's, like, white hot and just kind of – I mean, I'd actually – how do you debut him? I'd have Ilya Dragunov come up, and I'd put him on a Goldberg streak. I'd have him come up, and no one beats him. And he is cruising to his match against Sami Zayn undefeated.
Okay.
And it's Sami Zayn versus the undefeated Russian. You want to keep the Rocky story going? You have that. Yeah, you get to tap into that a little bit, but that's what I would do. I'd have Ilya come in there. I mean, you got to make sure you protect the booking and everything around him, and that sometimes means keeping him off of shows. But I'd have Ilya come out there, and he's just beating everybody. Every one of his singles matches, he's on a streak.
Let's end it there. That's a good place to end. This has been Shake the Rums. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. If you just want to follow the show, it's at Shake Them Ropes on Twitter as well. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Please listen to all our shows. If you don't like this one, there's others out there that you would like.
yeah, they're called bad shows because they're dumb. Yeah.
I also do a show on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show. We go on live on YouTube about 20 minutes afterwards. And then it drops in your podcatchers at the next day. Myself and Paul Fontaine doing a thorough deconstruction of that night's Dynamite show. I forgot to plug our donation thing. If you go on Red Circle, please click the thing. We don't make any money on this because we don't have any advertisers. We're kind of doing this gratis right now. You know, I'd like a little bit of a payout at the end of the quarter. Chris also has other things that he's doing. He'll let you know about them now.
Yeah. Starting tomorrow morning, I am back at my regular job at the Mountain. I will be
plugging your job.
It's super exciting. Yeah. No, this is an exciting project I've been working on, Jeff, recently.
I'll be at work tomorrow also if anybody wants to reach me.
I'm excited to talk about that. Like, my job is fun though, right? Like, I'm on a mountain. You like do computer beep bop boop bop nerd shit. I also teach guitar lessons and follow me on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV for guitar, bass, music theory lessons and stuff like that. I'm now able to get back to that because of the years thing. And then I will be playing at the Mountain on May 18th if you guys want to come out. It's also Bring Your Dog to the Mountain Day if you're in the Albuquerque area. So that's exciting.
Bebop, boobop. Okay.
Nerd shit.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.